Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. We aim to feature a variety of guests with roots in the Restoration tradition from Community of Christ and our friends from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.
Welcome to another episode on Project Zion. Today, I have Emily Rose on, who you may remember. She did an episode several months ago with Seth and a panel from the Millennials of Community of Christ. And so we've heard her story growing up Community of Christ and going to Graceland, but today we wanted to focus on the future, what she's doing now, and her thoughts on the future of Community of Christ and where millennials can plug themselves in if they may have found themselves unchurched. So yeah, welcome, Emily.
Yay! Hello, podcast world.
So let's just get everybody up to speed of what you're doing right now.
Okay. So I'm currently finishing my Master of Divinity at Claremont School of Theology. I'll be done in 48 days.
Congratulations.
Nobody's counting. And I also have just recently started serving as pastor of an emerging Community of Christ congregation in St. George, Utah. We are the Southern Utah Emerging Congregation. That's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm super jazzed about
it. Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit more. So how have you been able to connect with Latter-day Seekers? Has it been something that you've specifically studied in seminary, or has it kind of been a side thing for you to get connected to the world of Latter-day Seekers, or what's been your interest with that?
Yeah. So I would say yes and no in terms of studying it at seminary. The first experience I had even learning about who Latter-day Seekers were was actually at an event that the Mission Center put on. It was a priesthood and leadership retreat. And okay. So we had breakout sessions, and Lachlan Mackay came to that first one, and he just gave a primer on Latter-day Seekers, who they are, what their needs are, and sort of how we can best respond to them. And that was the first time that I had ever like thought about future ministry in the church and said, yes, I want to do that. I've never been able to like pinpoint something that feels natural. Like that's a space that I want to be in. So, that was a lot of fun just learning about that. And then we came and did a second session just recently in the fall, and I was actually able to do that with Terry Reed, which is a precious thing that I hold now.
Yeah.
So I felt drawn to it because I think being present to spiritual crisis is important. And the hard work of sort of unraveling and reweaving of your faith is something that I've experienced myself. And that I think is part of who I don't know if it's part of who we are in Community of Christ, but it's certainly we have space to do that in Community of Christ. And so I feel passionately about inviting those who feel like they need a spiritual home and space to do that in a genuine and authentic place. I mean, that excites me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at.
No, I think that's really cool. And I guess I really appreciate members of Community of Christ that have taken the time to do that and to learn the language of Latter-day Seekers. Mm-hmm. Because it's interesting. You would think that, you know, words would mean the same thing in the LDS Church they do in Community of Christ, but they don't. And there's a lot of cultural things that I think everybody, you know, on both sides of the fence have to learn about and, you know, really understand and sometimes actually experience it themselves and see. Mm-hmm. So it's, I, as, you know, I guess I still could consider myself a Latter-day Seeker. I'm a brand new convert.
Maybe you're ordained in a couple weeks.
It's happening fast. No, it's something that I appreciate, and knowing that, you know, there's people around the country and around the world. So it's really good to know that there's people, around the church and in different congregations that are safe for Latter-day Seekers. Yeah. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I also think it has to do with, I have a real love of our history and our story. Mm. And I learned about it early on in my life. So my dad did a whole year of Sunday school with us. It was just church history, but he taught it in a way. I don't know if he's going to like that I'm outing him for this. He taught it in a way where he would like close the door and be like, the guys down the hall don't want you to know this, but. So he was really authentic and honest, and it was a way of letting us own all of the complexities of the story and be okay with that.
Yeah.
But that, I think, has been really foundational for me. So I've had this interest in our restoration heritage in a unique way that I think kind of points to our denominational DNA and how it's sort of threaded through who we are now. So I just have this affection for it. And I think that part of that is why I feel drawn to Latter-day Seeker folks too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that one thing, that is so, I guess, time sensitive about Latter-day Seekers is, you know, they're coming out of this faith, that is very almost orthodox and very literal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just really tend to reject everything, especially kind of throw their hands up in the air with, you know, another restoration church. Mm-hmm. I know that I've got a lot of pushback from some of my ex-Mormon friends, you know, mm-hmm. that are like, wait, what? Why would you choose to go with someone?
Yeah.
And so, I guess my point in bringing that up is that, I think when we have people who are our generation, more millennials, who have kind of walked through that journey, it's different from, say, somebody who's 65 who, you know, did it decades ago. You know, yeah. it makes it more relatable and applicable, and especially when we're young, we're still in school, we're having kids ourselves, you know, things like that. So, yeah, it's exciting. So talk a little bit about the St. George congregation.
Okay. So our Southern Utah group, we have about 15 that I have met. There are some that have attended that I haven't met yet, and I've only been twice. I'm going to go again this weekend. So I'm excited to see who all I can meet in that way. But they are all Latter-day Seeker folks. We're going to have two confirmations this Sunday. So they'll be our official first two members of the Southern Utah congregation.
That's so exciting.
Which is so exciting. and it's just going to be a great, great experience. We have a lot of kids, and they're all just super fun and very sweet. And I can just tell that there's, a love there in the group. That's just one of support and trying to make safe space for people. And I'm just really excited to work with the people that are there. We have some really good folks. So
yeah. And if I understand right, these guys they were researching Communion of Christ and everything mm-hmm. completely on their own. And then didn't they reach out to the church and say, hey, we're this little group that needs direction or needs.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. They reached out, in a couple of different ways. I know that Robin and Seth were really instrumental in helping them sort of form their group.
So what do you think the growth potential is for down in the Southern Utah area?
St. George.
Yeah.
So I feel like I may not have the best understanding of that because it's still hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that we have 15 people that just showed up out of nowhere and are doing this. Like, that in itself is thrilling to me. But I've spoken with Seth, Bryant, who is the pastor in Salt Lake for some of our listeners. Mm-hmm. And he really thinks that there is huge growth potential. And so we just want to be invitational and welcome those who are seeking us out. You know, I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I think there's definite growth potential there. Right now we're meeting in a Presbyterian church, and so there's definitely room for more people if others are interested. But I think the potential is pretty great there.
Yeah. And you guys are planning different outreach projects and you're starting to...
Yeah. Yeah. We've started making mana bags on the third Sunday of every month. We're going to try... Bill Real is going to help us kind of organize service projects that we can do in the community. And last night we actually met with a woman that works for the Attorney General's Office in Safety Net for... those who need help who are affiliated with like FLDS and some other groups that are experiencing real suffering and poverty. And so I think in that particular geographic region, we may have opportunities to plug in just to provide, again, a safety net. So yeah. Provide food, provide blankets, things that you can't buy with food stamps, you know. So there's lots of potential. I'd love to get us plugged into the Interfaith Network in St. George. And I know there's a farmer's market. I think it'd be cool if we – there's a garden on the grounds where we meet the church. And so I think it'd be cool to partner with the Presbyterian Church, and there's also a Jewish synagogue that meets in the same building, so we all kind of share the space.
Oh, cool.
So I think it'd be really neat if we all partnered together with the garden and did some neat things with that in the community, maybe even at the farmer's market. So
yeah.
It'd be fun.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to lift these things up because I think that right now a lot of people are very uncertain about the growth and the future of the church.
Yeah.
But, you know, knowing that there are emerging groups that are popping up,
yeah,
that are really getting involved with the community,
yeah,
that are making a difference, I think is something that, you know, deserves to be highlighted.
Absolutely, so, absolutely.
Kudos to you.
We're excited. I mean, it's still very new. I'm still trying to finish school so I can get out there more and be with the people, but they are hitting the ground running for sure.
Yeah.
It's mostly going to be me catching up. That's good.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, I guess, our generation a little bit more. And, you know, I know a lot of people that have left the LDS church and, they fall into the camp of spiritual, but not religious, which, mm-hmm. you know, I think is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really value community. And I think that there's mm-hmm. a lot of potential to heal in community, whether you've mm-hmm. gone through an intense faith crisis or journey, or whether you're, you know, wherever you are with your faith. I think that there's real value in community.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's sad to me to know that there are so many in the 20s and 30s
mm-hmm.
Who don't necessarily feel that that is something that needs to be a priority. So I guess what would your response be to them, or what would you, I don't know, encourage them to reconsider? Or what do you think that us as a community, how can we outreach to young adults?
Yeah. I think just in the title, spiritual but not religious, there is this something that points to a deep spiritual longing. So even if you are not participating in church, but you're claiming this identity as someone who still taps into a spiritual life, that means that there's something that we in our institutions of religion, we are not tapping into.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's some spiritual hunger and longing that's out there that I think we have opportunity to try and align ourselves with in creative ways. I don't know if you've read the book Christianity After Religion by Dana Butler Bass.
No, but I...
You should. It's a good one. And another good one is anything by Barbara Brown Taylor, but I think Leaving Church or Learning to Walk in the Dark.
Yeah,
any of those. Yeah, they point to this like current that we have in this like religious landscape that we're all kind of swimming in the West in particular, but where we're kind of stepping away from institutionalized religion, and yet there's still this longing somewhere, this spiritual longing. And I think we are poised, if we really play our cards right, to respond to that in creative ways. I think that that's probably our most urgent calling is to respond to that in creative ways. And I think there are some that, you know, maybe don't even claim spiritual but not religious, that are just like, I'm done with institution, I don't need that, and that's just not going to be part of my life.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. I mean, that's, you know, that's their choice. But I do think that within that subgroup of people who are leaving institutional life, there's still this spiritual longing, and that can be tapped into through community. That's definitely one piece of it. And I think that's what we're craving in our Southern Utah congregation. You can tell that there's just this craving to be around people who are loving and safe and who aren't afraid to ask questions.
Yeah.
So I think that in itself is a good response for us. But I think there are other creative ways for us to do church that doesn't necessarily look like church,
mm-hmm.
That can help pay attention to where these spiritual longings are pointing us. You know, I don't know. That feels really wordy, but there's,
no,
there's my answer.
No, good. So I guess what would some of those ways of doing church that don't look like church look like? I mean, are you thinking, you know, community spiritual practices or, you know, community outreach?
Yeah, I think that there's definite potential in community spiritual practices. One thing that I've heard about – well, there's two things I would say. Okay, first, just in my experience in Southern California, I've been attending the Orange Congregation and will continue to attend when I'm not in St. George. And we did this thing called just walking the neighborhood. And I think it would be called a missional practice in LCM language, leading mm-hmm. congregations in mission. And the idea is that you walk the neighborhood and you pray for what you're passing by. And that seems really small and maybe not transformative, but it really, because we walked the neighborhood, we encountered people who are now baptized into our congregation. Because we walked the neighborhood, you know, we form relationships with people who are not necessarily going to come to church, but they may come to activities that we have like Peace Camp, or they may come to our Halloween event where we have trunk and treat, that kind of thing. So I would say paying attention to our context is a really important response. I bring up walking the neighborhood because it helps you to maybe pay attention to where God is already at work in just your small context. And that's outside of the buildings of a church. That's not worship on a Sunday. You know, I mean, it could be. You could design your experience to be that is worship on a Sunday. But that gets us out of the building, which I think is valuable. And when I said two things, the other thing I would point to is there are other missional practices like that on missionalleaders.org. I don't know how many of our listeners know about that, but Leading Congregations in Mission, or LCM, is kind of like a pilot program that the church has been doing in sort of the Western field for a few years now. And on that website, there's missional practices. So it's aligning ourselves with mission through spiritual practice. And I think that taps into this spiritual longing that we have. But there's also this response of young adults who are leaving that are like, well, I don't buy church because you don't walk the walk. You know, like you don't practice what you preach. You're not actually helping people. You're just coming in on a Sunday and not doing anything. So if we orient ourselves through spiritual practice that actually gets us out the door, I think that's more relevant and inviting to those of us who don't buy the institution.
Yeah. No, well, and we've seen that in Salt Lake. You know, we've done the manna bags and things like mm-hmm. that before. And I have several people who want to be involved when that's what we do.
Yeah.
And I have no hidden agenda to, you know, dunk them in the font. You know, like, I think that, even if we can be that safe community, you know, mm-hmm. while we're doing some sort of community outreach, mm-hmm. or whether it's hosting a fireside for Sunstone or, you mm-hmm. know, whatever gets us connected, to other people that doesn't look like a worship service on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, I think that those things are, important. Obviously worship services on Sunday
are
important. Of course.
Absolutely. And that's formational for sure.
Yeah. But I love that, I mean, each congregation can kind of take on their own identity.
Yeah.
And fit the needs of their community. So right. what might work in Salt Lake might not work in Orange, or right. what works in Orange might not work right. in Salt Lake.
And, right. Well, and I like that you pointed to not having an agenda. So I think one trap that we kind of fall into is that we feel this urgency like, oh my gosh, our congregations are dying. How can we get people in the door? Mm-hmm. And we like latch on to numbers. Like the numbers game is a really important game that we trick ourselves with. When really, I think the question to ask is, what do we have to offer, even if our group is small? Mm-hmm. What do we have to offer the outside community? Not how can we change ourselves to get them in the door? How can we change ourselves to get out the door?
Yeah, no, I love the way you put that. Well, and and I think especially when we're, if we're talking, you know, Latter-day Seekers, a lot of them come in, I came in very skeptical. I mean,
yeah.
You talk to the first, you know, few Community of Christ people that I met with and I had a pretty big wall up. I mean, sure. I was like, I don't know if I trust you people.
Right.
And so you're going to have to earn that trust essentially. And so I think that, and one thing, you know, when you're doing outreach to seekers, a lot of people are going to, you know, walk into your doors having completely different perspectives and needing different things.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't all need to find a new church. And so it's kind of this interesting ministry because you need to be a safe landing place for them.
Yeah.
But you might just be a step on their path, you know? And so it can be kind of sad sometimes because you get attached to these people or even, you know, lifelong Community of Christ people, that, you know, you would love if they would stay and worship with you on Sunday, but just realizing that, you know, if we can find a way to fit their need, then we need to find that way, you know, and not necessarily get super attached. And like you said, just turn them into a number or a project.
It's a lot of laying down of congregational ego.
Yeah.
That's a lot, which can be painful.
It can be because sometimes I love Community of Christ so much and I see so much, you know, anti-church movement here that are, you know, people are just done with religion. And I'm like, you don't understand how amazing
there
we
could
are.
Be so many good things.
Like, just give up your pride. And, you know, but I'm like, oh, reality check there, Brit.
No, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's exciting because I think that we do have something to offer. And
absolutely.
When we admit that, then I think that, you know, it's just going to blossom and grow.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of Community of Christ people have almost been shocked, maybe, that the Seeker movement is even happening.
It was shocking to me that we it just came out of nowhere in St. George. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. But I think, I don't know, there's just a lot of enthusiasm right now. And I know that, I mean, it's really easy, to maybe focus on the really, really hard things that Community of Christ is going through.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to downplay that at all, but at the same time, I think that, you know, we're on the verge of something huge. And I don't know if anyone knows how big it is yet because it really is just within the last couple of years that it's blossomed. So. Yeah.
I think we're on the verge of something huge for a lot of reasons. And the Seekers movement is definitely part of it. But I think we have something unique. We're poised in unique ways to respond to the religious landscape right now. I think the fact that we have continuing revelation, which builds into our DNA that our identity as a church changes and that we follow God into new identities. I think that is revolutionary in the religious landscape that we're in. I think we consider ourselves a movement as well as a tradition. So that dynamic flow, I think, is just powerful. I think another reason we're poised is we have a really unique priesthood structure. In my experience in seminary, I have had awesome ecumenical encounters and I've made friends with lots of people across the Christian spectrum. And I think that we are poised uniquely because we have an ordination system that empowers everyone and says all are called. And so we can respond to things uniquely that way. Instead of having just one ordained person that is the clergy for a congregation and they take on the weight of a lot, we have a system that is more grassroots. And I think that in kind of this postmodern spiritual but not religious time is actually really refreshing and I think could be compelling to people who distrust hierarchical institutions. So,
yeah, and cool. I think that it gives a lot of fluidity too to what ministry can look like, which is something that I don't think that I fully comprehend coming from an LDS background.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't comprehend it in what priesthood and clergy look like in other traditions, you know?
Oh, yeah.
There is a very, you know, you go to seminary to become a priest, to become, you know.
Right.
And so it's not grassroots. It's not something that, you know, your average person really gets involved with. And I think that I mean, I probably take that for granted a little bit, you know? But yeah, I think that it can be a very hands-on form of ministry that, can take on whatever identity you want to take it.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything to say about like World Conference or, or do you have any response to the call for generosity or anything that's like happening right now in the church?
Yeah. Gosh, it feels really heavy. I know that there's just a lot of uncertainty and, heading into World Conference, I know there's a lot of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of points us to this place, right, where we feel hopeful about this vision that of possibility that we have, kind of juxtaposed to this like total vast unknowing of where we are financially, as a church. And so Tony Schvella-Smith gave this really great Facebook post shortly after we kind of found out that there was going to be another wave of cutting back. And he said, you know, Lent is really cutting us to the bone this year. And I think that's kind of where we're at. And it's really hard to speak to that. I think the best that we can do is sort of hold each other's hands through it and maybe understand that God doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Even when things feel like utter loss, and maybe try and pay attention to where that leads us. So I'm hoping that at World Conference we have that kind of experience where even in this, in the midst of unknowing and perhaps even despair and I don't know, just being disheartened about where we're at, that we come together and really pay attention to the leavings of the Spirit and where we can go as community, and find hope in being with each other. I don't know. I guess the image of like singing together through it makes sense to me. Hope we sing a lot of songs.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's been interesting to kind of, you know, to join the church right at this time.
Yeah.
And this paradox of so much joy and yet so much pain and sorrow, mm-hmm. and having this vision for the future and yet dealing with the realities of today.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'm really grateful that World Conference is happening when it is.
Yeah.
Because I think it will, you know, give us an opportunity to come together as community and, like you said, sing a lot of songs.
Yeah, we need to sing a lot of songs.
And really enjoy the blessings of community.
Yeah.
And you know, recharge and rejuvenate each other.
Yeah.
And just hold each other close.
Yeah.
And make
yeah.
new friends and, you know, reconnect with old friends.
Absolutely. This is your first World Conference, right?
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
We're pretty excited, too.
Yes.
It'll be good.
I remember my first World Conference, and I pulled up to the auditorium. I must have been like 12, and I was used to being like me and my brother and maybe two or three other people in our youth group. That was it, and it was just a small congregation. And we pulled up to the auditorium, and I was like, we can fill that? I was just shocked that we had enough people that could fill that building. But it was just a very captivating experience because I was able to walk into this space and know who my people were. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt like I had landed in this place that felt like home. So I'm just thrilled that you get to come yeah. and have that experience.
Well,
it's going to be good.
We went to Mission Center Conference last October.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because, you know, in Salt Lake, the vast, vast majority of us who are active now are Latter-day Seekers.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of been interesting to, you know, to try to figure out, okay, is our identity really community Christ? Are we just these rogue people, you know? But going to Mission Center Conference, everything, you know, kind of came full circle. And I was like, yeah. okay, we are doing something right in Salt Lake. Like, we yeah. look like these people.
Yeah.
These people, you know? And then, yeah, gathering with, you know, dozens and dozens of people and starting to sing and everything. It just, mm-hmm. you feel all of a sudden, okay, this is worth it. You
yeah.
know, the journey that we took our family, our kids on,
yeah.
It just really came full circle. And I was like, okay, we can go to World
yes.
Conference. This is going to
oh,
be great.
And it's going to be so good.
Yeah. And I mean, it's cool because with Facebook and everything, I mean, I
yeah.
feel, you know, like I know several
yeah.
Community Christ people that now we're going to be able to meet in person.
Absolutely. So. I'm hoping that we gather up, like, will there be a group of Latter-day Seekers that come?
I hear that there's something in the works.
Okay.
I know zero details about it.
I don't know any details either.
But Robin has said that, that, I think there'll be some sort of Latter-day Seeker group going.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, we've got a small little army of folks from Salt Lake that are going to be storming in. So it'll be...
We'll have to take you to Sheridan's. There's a custard place that everybody goes after, like after all of the services are done. There's like this swarm of Community of Christ people that also have our dorky little name tags on, and we all go to Sheridan's for custard. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm really excited. Yeah.
Maybe going back to the whole unchurched thing is, is kind of this idea of, you know, Jesus and the gospel is just kind of old news. Like, it's not anything that's fresh. It's not anything, you know, I mean, especially if people come out of a very literal Orthodox belief.
Yeah.
They almost, you know, what is the purpose of Jesus? Or why should I mean, if I want to, you know, have community or spirituality, I can go to the Unitarian Church, and that's great.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, like, why Jesus? What do you think that, you know, a more Christian-based theology, what's the benefit of that?
Why Jesus? Oh, man, Brittany, all the big questions. Okay. Choose the Christian path, because Jesus's kind of subversive love is compelling to me. I've hung out with a lot of Disciples of Christ folks at, seminary, and they have this real solid, like, table theology. Like, everybody's welcome at the table. So communion is really central to them. And I've really bonded with them because of that. So I think the image of blessed and sacred community at the communion table and what happens at the communion table is why I choose Christianity. Mm. So when we test out this tiny glimpse of the kingdom of God, I say kingdom because I am a little bit feminist. Anyway, when we test out this kingdom of God where everybody is fed enough and everybody is welcome to the table, that I think is really transformative. So I that's why I stay rooted in this tradition. But I think there's a way to be Christian where Jesus doesn't have to win. that's how one of my professors put it. Where you can still have a pluralistic worldview and say, you know what, God is at work in other places.
Yeah.
And still be firmly rooted in Christianity and as someone who wants to emulate Christ's mission. And so I think Community of Christ our approach to that is really compelling to me because we focus more on how can we align ourselves with how Jesus lived? How can we take on Christ's mission in radical and compelling ways as opposed to saying you need Jesus to be saved in some afterlife experience?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there are Community of Christ people that wouldn't say that, you know, because we're unity and diversity kind of people. But we tend to focus more on how to emulate the life of Jesus rather than needing Jesus to rescue us somehow from God. I don't know, that whole atonement substitution business transaction model is really hard for me to get my head around.
Yeah.
And so I think the way that I've been able to really root myself in Community of Christ is because we take seriously what it means to follow Jesus in really radical, embodied, incarnational ways. And that's compelling to me.
Yeah. I relate to that a lot. I think that, you know, when I was leaving Mormonism, I didn't know what I thought about Jesus or, you know, literalism and atonement was – it's still – I still kind of – you know, I hear things about atonement and everything, and I'm still just kind of like, oh. And I'm actually preaching on Easter, and I'm like, okay, Britt, you've got to do it.
New life in Christ. We are made new.
Yeah. And so it's been interesting because, you know, there's been different points on my journey that I've thought, like, why am I still doing the Christian thing, you know, especially the restoration thing. Mm-hmm. But I love that you brought up communion. And that was something that I kind of had to come to terms with. You know, in the LDS tradition, it's 12-year-old boys that serve communion. And so
Nobody older?
Well, I mean, priesthood. So they start at 12. So, I mean, it can be 14 or 16 or...
But not like adults?
Sometimes if they need fill-ins, but
I'm still learning.
Yeah, it's mostly deacons, teachers, and priests. But even priests would be not super common. So they bless it, but then the younger boys would serve it. Yeah.
Okay.
And so for me growing up, the sacrament of communion was always something that was just kind of stale that I didn't necessarily take super seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm going to be ordained a priest in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, I've kind of got to come to terms with this. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to just, like, you know, jump into this sacrament and have it be stale like it was, you know, growing up. And it's not stale for every LDS person, but for me, it was just, you know, it wasn't something that I ever was going to do. And so I didn't think a lot about it. And, you know, atonement theology was very strong. And so that whole worldview has shifted for me. And so, so I've really had to critically analyze what communion is and what the purpose is and why we do it. And so I have kind of come full circle with that, and have really been able to see the benefit and that it, you know, represents community. And so, I like that you brought that up because, I mean, I don't know a ton about other religions, you know, Eastern religions. Got Easter on the brain.
Yeah, it's coming.
I think that that is something that's very unique. And I love that at Community of Christ, all are welcome. I mean, we've had people, we had, at our last communion service, we had someone who had been barred from taking communion for 3 years. Uh-huh. And it was the first time in 3 years that he had taken communion. And he was served by a woman. And it was a completely transformative experience
for him.
And, I mean, I gave him a ride home after church. And he just, like, could not stop talking about it because he was so excited. And
that's excellent.
So, I mean, it's in those moments that I really realize what Christianity can do to people, because it's a very tangible sharing, you know, being the hands and feet of Jesus.
Absolutely. So. That's the other symbolism that I really like is that even in our communion prayers, we say that, you know, we may take on the name of Christ, take on the life, and I don't know, I haven't memorized it because I read it out of the hymnal, but it's take on the name of Christ.
Yeah.
And when we all do that together, it unifies us in a really powerful way that, again, is just really compelling to me that I am taking on Christ as I'm serving this to others who are doing that too, and that we're all committing to embody Christ's mission together. And it gets me every time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Well, and I'm excited to see that on a large scale at World Conference.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to be amazing. It is pretty incredible. It's good stuff.
So one of the things that I've noticed is the transformation that Community of Christ Sings has taken, the hymnal. I think it's an interesting idea that we sing our theology. And I was wondering if you had any reflections on that, because you have gone from having Hymns of the Saints as your hymnal to now Community of Christ Sings.
So I just wrote a blog post that I don't think we'll get published, but for my process theology class, we have to write a blog for processandfaith.org, which is like a blog that talks about everyday spirituality and process theology, which is a whole other podcast we could do. but I wrote it on the hymn Now in This Moment. And I talked about how that, so it's a rewrite. So Barbara and Dick Howard rewrote the hymn Blessed Assurance. And so like the chorus is similar, but not even the same there because it says now, this is our story, this is our song, but the original is this is my story, this is my song.
Okay.
And just that wording changes things for me anyway.
Yeah.
But the main crux of what I was saying was that this temporal change. So the Blessed Assurance hymn was kind of this, again, that atonement, like, Jesus is mine, and I have this assurance of, you know, eternal life and all of this stuff. And it was very rooted in knowing something in this, like, divine future. Whereas now in this moment is pointing to sacred co-authorship with God. You know, we write the story, and God is leading us, points to that in this moment right here. And that gets me really excited.
Yeah.
So That's something that I wrote recently. Maybe I'll put it on our Southern Utah blog if it doesn't get published. So in class, if the professor likes it, then she'll put it on the big website. So we'll find out.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So Community Christ Hymnal is, I think, one of the greatest, if not the greatest,
so
missional tools that the church has. I know that in Salt Lake, we have specifically ordered, hymnals. If the hymns really touch people, we'll just hand them out.
Like, oh, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, it's something that I think has really been transformative. And I know for me, I got my hymnal at Women's Retreat a couple years ago.
Oh, nice.
And at that point, I was pretty jaded on scripture. I wasn't, I was like, I need a break
from
standard works or whatever. and I didn't really know how to deconstruct them and responsibly look at them. And I was just over it.
Yeah.
And so I just took Communion of Christ Sings and read it cover to cover. And
oh,
I was like,
wow.
Oh my God, I love this church.
That is a great way to do that.
There was so much in there. I mean, it was like my nightly scripture study.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool.
What a great way to go through the hymnal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping in our Southern Utah group to do that. I want to, so my husband Daniel plays guitar and I just sort of want to volunteer him, to come out to Southern Utah with me and do like a hymn exploration of the hymnal. Cause I do think it's a really important missional tool. I mean, some of the hymns in there are pretty radical.
Yeah, they really are.
And, we have a whole section on just feminine divine images, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
So I think, and I've written about this before, that I think we sing our theology before we know it's our theology.
Yeah.
And so the hymnal is taking us in really important directions. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I think that I love what you said, we sing our theology. There have been times where, someone has asked me a question and like I've literally gone to the hymn book. This is,
this is where we're at.
This isn't scripture, but it's in our hymnal.
Yeah.
We sing
absolutely.
I think that it really shows, the journey that Communion of Christ has been on. So I have Hymns of the Saints as well, which is a beautiful book.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I grew up with it.
Yeah. And it's been interesting to, compare and contrast even the size difference. There's a ton more hymns in Communion of Christ Sings.
Yeah, a couple hundred.
It's a really big book. And I know that I've mentioned it. I think I mentioned it on Facebook one time about, I think I quoted it or so. I quoted a hymn in the 600s somewhere. And
oh, yeah.
Somebody was like, wait, your hymn book has 600 hymns? And I'm like, yes, and they are all amazing.
It's all good stuff.
Yeah, it really is. So I think that it's been really transformative for this community in Salt Lake, especially. We've had a lot of people that, you look around on Sunday when we're singing, and a lot of times there's not a dry eye,
That's sweet.
And yeah, I mean, I remember the first time singing For Everyone Born, and I just who are these people? Like, this is amazing.
That's one of my favorites too.
Oh
my gosh.
Yeah.
For Everyone Born is definitely one of our newer anthems.
Yeah.
That's really powerful.
Yeah.
It's good. Draw the Circle Wide is another good one.
Yes.
Yeah. It's good.
And All Are Welcome.
Yes.
One of my favorites.
That one was quoted a lot when there was the recent policy change in the LDS Church.
Yeah.
I saw that on a lot of Facebook statuses.
Yeah.
Just a lot in the Latter-day Seeker page.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, we sing our theology. So if we take that seriously, then all are welcome.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It's true. So let's talk about seminary a little bit more.
Okay.
What do you think the benefit is of going interreligion? Specifically, how do you think that it's going to enhance your ministry?
Mm.
Or, what do you think, what tools are you being taught?
Yeah.
That you're going to bring into the church?
This is such a good reflective thing, as I only have 48 days left. I'm really excited.
Has it been worth it?
It's been so worth it. It really has. So I feel like I have gotten preparation for ministry that's very on the ground. So it's been kind of interesting to like tell my classmates that I'm already ordained, because the setup is that you go to seminary before you're ordained. So I'm like, well, we do ordination differently in Communion of Christ. And in some ways I feel like going to seminary at CST has been a way to really dig deep into things that will be important to me if I, you know, want to be a minister in Community of Christ. So taking a preaching class has been extremely valuable. Taking a worship class, even though Community of Christ does some worship things differently, being able to trace back the roots to, you know, ancient Christian worship practices and kind of why we do what we do has just been extremely valuable. I also have been taking a lot of kind of pastoral care and spiritual formation classes that have really been transformative. One of them I took last semester, and I'm taking one from the same professor this semester, and they're kind of crossover. So the one I'm taking this semester is teaching the compassion practice. And the one I took last semester is, or it was, internal family systems therapy, which is kind of a mouthful. But the basic premise is that, when we encounter conflict or when we encounter, others who are reacting in ways that aren't positive or our relationships are strained, the action we take is to take a U-turn and pay attention to ourselves and why is it that we're reacting the way we are. Mm-hmm. And to do that in the context of spiritual formation. So I have a class right now that I spend an hour of the first hour of the class, we're led in a guided meditation. And we do that before we do anything else. And so the idea is that we're doing the internal work that will then help us guide others to do the internal work. So that's been extremely valuable. I mean, I feel like I have to pinch myself sometimes because I'm like sitting in these classes with these professors who are, just amazing. I'm also taking a class called Narrative Pedagogies, which is really fun. And it's all about storytelling. And I think that in particular is going to be really useful in the Latter-day Seeker community because it's radical to tell your story.
Yeah.
Especially if it's one that involves such loss and grief and transition and joy all kind of wrapped into one thing. I think, creating space for people to tell their stories is just going to be really important. So that's something that I'm really excited about. So yeah, it has been worth it. It's been a lot of work. But I think another thing that I've really been passionate or excited about is that I've gotten to do this in an ecumenical and interreligious setting. Mm-hmm. So I've gotten to make friends on all sorts of different denominational identities. And I've got friends that are Muslim and Buddhist and gone to class with Jewish folks. And so to have that kind of interrelated learning where we're all coming from different perspectives and bringing everything that we have to the table has been really valuable. And our professors encourage us to do that. You know, we're encouraged in our writing to situate ourselves and name where our context is and how that informs what we're writing about. So that's just been really great.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So how is that, cause Daniel, your husband, is at Community of Christ Seminary.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. He's getting his MAR.
Has that been interesting to, parallel on each?
Yeah. We've had, we're just covering the whole gamut of seminary. we'll be covered in the Rose Harmon household. So the thing that has been, I don't know if sad, but I am sad that I didn't get to have like a Community of Christ history class or a Community of Christ theology class. Like, and that's what Daniel's getting to have right now. So there's definite pros and cons to seminary with Community of Christ, seminary outside of Community of Christ. And so he's getting to really root himself in who we are, which I think is really valuable. And I've sort of had to take on that project on my own and, you know, write about Community of Christ. I feel like I'm kind of annoying with how much I talk about Community of Christ in my classes. One time I made this meme that I sent to Daniel and it was like of Hermione Granger, like raising her hand really high like this. And I just wrote, in Community of Christ, we? And I was like, that's me. That's me in class every day.
Like me in real life every day. So I get it.
So I feel like I might have annoyed my classmates a little bit, but I've made it my project to really bring that in. So even, you know, even in my interreligious education class, or multicultural religious education, that's a mouthful too, but in my multicultural religious education class, my final for that, we were kind of given free rein to do what we wanted. And I designed a women's retreat for Latter-day Seeker women, and used the elements of the class and really made it, point to something I would want to do in real life. In fact, I think I remember Facebooking you and saying, what's important to Latter-day Seeker women? and so those are things that will definitely be useful to me later. I've just sort of had to take on that project intentionally to weave in my own Community of Christ identity.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
I
appreciate that a lot. Yeah, I think that, well, so I'm hopefully going to seminary soon.
Yeah.
And so it's almost been interesting to justify this decision, I guess.
Yeah.
People are like, why? What's the future in that, you know? But for me, I mean, as a Latter-day Seeker new convert, I do want to be rooted in Community of Christ identity.
Yeah.
And I did think, you know, maybe I could do a religious program at, you know, more local university here or something.
Right.
But yeah, for me, not growing up in the church, I really do want to be grounded in the identity of Community
Absolutely.
Christ. But I really like, the idea of, you know, being more ecumenical and having that really rounded, because I'm kind of naive when it comes to a lot of other religions. And so, but yeah, I think it's good. And I think that, I guess the benefit that I hope to get from it, and maybe you can affirm this or be like, psh. But just to make things more real. I mean, you can sit in the pews on Sunday and you can act like you know what's going on, and you can act like, you know, you know the background and everything. So I guess that I hope that seminary, and I guess I would encourage others to consider this.
Yeah.
Go to seminary, you know, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah.
Because I think that being grounded in either the identity of the church, of Community of Christ, or the greater church, the greater Christian movement, just religion in general, spiritual practices, or whatever. If we want to bring this message to the world, we kind of have to have our act together.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah. Well, and I think even if you in the future wanted to do ecumenical or interreligious dialogue, you would have to know who you are first. That's the basic premise. You don't go in thinking, oh, I'll just take something from your religion and you can take something from mine. Like, the idea is that if you're going to truly dialogue, you have to know who you are. And so I think Community of Christ Seminary is a great way to do that. And, you know, I feel like I kind of had that experience going to Graceland a little bit, because I did the Community of Christ Leadership Program and I was a religion major. And so I had that experience. I'd love to have a refresher a little bit. It's been a while, but I had a great experience in that. And I feel like I really was able to root myself in who Community of Christ is, and also really ask challenging questions of faith and religion. And that's really where I had my own kind of unraveling and reweaving of faith. Because I came with certain assumptions about just my broad scope of theology and how God relates to the world. And when I got to college, it was a lot of asking hard questions that maybe pulled at the strings of that a little bit. But the good thing was that I was in a place that not only supported those questions, but helped me to be in a safe place to reweave something back together that was more life-giving and made more sense to me. And I think even just that experience has really made me feel drawn to the experience of Latter-day Seekers, because unraveling and reweaving is all part of it.
Yeah, huge part of it.
That's,
Thank you for this conversation. Hopefully it's helpful and was semi-cohesive. And
yeah, there is hope for the church.
I know.
There's hope in the future, and good things are coming.
I think so too. And like I said, I don't mean to, you know, downplay anything, but I do think that Community of Christ has a really strong message that the world needs to hear. And I don't think God's done with us.
So. Oh yeah. We're poised in really exciting ways. So it's good.
Definitely. Okay. Well, Yay. Thank you, Emily.
Thanks, Project Zion.
Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ. The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ.